last two cases, so he will be participating on the briefs in both this case and the next case. Mr. Krieger, good morning to you. You may approach.
Please, the court, Bob Krieger, I represent Pat Holmes. Unusual case, but it's easily summarized. Mr. Combs was charged in a four-count information relating to financial dealings with Beverly Mosher. The case was tried to the jury. After deliberating over several days, the jury foreman twice declared that the jury was unable to reach a verdict in the case. After the second such declaration, a mistrial was declared.
On whose motion?
It was on my motion.
Is that significant?
Absolutely not. It has nothing to do with anything in the case. The cases that the government talks about for defense-induced mistrials have to do with mistrials during the course of the case, in which it declares error in the proceeding prejudice of the defendant. And it asks for a mistrial based upon an unfair trial. It cannot then turn around and claim that trial by a retrial would constitute double jeopardy. This has nothing to do with mistrial in that sense. The mistrial declaration is a ministerial act in a case in which the jury declares its deadlock. The judge can do it, the defense can do it, the prosecution can do it, and
okay.
In this particular case. Nobody resisted that the proper remedy was a mistrial.
Well, what is the result of the mistrial?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What is the result of the mistrial? The case is over, isn't it?
Well, that's the question you have to answer, and I don't think that's true, and that's why I'm here.
Well, when the court declares a mistrial, discharges the jury, and everybody goes home, then subsequent to that, affidavits start flowing into the court that this really wasn't our intent. We didn't mean to vote that way. We didn't understand what we were doing. Isn't this all over with the granting of the mistrial?
Well, I don't think so.
Well, what case supports that?
The basic precepts constitutionally under the Eighth Amendment and the Due Process Clause. In other words, there is an error in this case, and this error was created by a combination of factors.
One of the errors was created by your asking for a mistrial.
Well, then so state. But that's not the case. The mistrial wasn't because of I complaining of any error in the case. The mistrial was declared because the jurors said they were deadlocked,
right.
And that wasn't true.
And then what remedy would you have with regard to polling the juries as to why they were deadlocked?
Well, let me pose the question this way. What's the proper way to raise it, if there is a proper way? We have a
raise what?
The issue of misconduct in which the jury foreman reports through error, oversight, inadvertence, neglect, misunderstanding that the unanimous verdict of the jury on three of the counts was a not guilty verdict. And does Mr. Combs have a right under the Equal Protection Clause and the Eighth Amendment to say, I was put in jeopardy in those three charges and this jury found me guilty?
Under Section 27-606, was the foreperson on this jury competent to submit that affidavit?
The trial court accepted it.
That wasn't my question.
Well, the answer is a complicated one. I hadn't thought about it until I read Pena something versus Colorado, decided in March. It's a capital case in which state law in Colorado prohibited inquiry into jury deliberations. And the U.S. Supreme Court in March of this year said, state law rules of evidence do not control whether constitutional rights are implicated, and it'll take evidence to listen to whether or not a defendant's due process rights or other constitutional rights that occurred during a jury trial took place. So nobody argued below, as far as I could tell, the competence of the foreman to submit the jury. We had a hearing, the evidence was offered and received, and without making any findings or conclusions, the trial judge just denied the plea and bar. Didn't say this wasn't the case, didn't say there's no competent evidence that the acquittals were true. It appears that the trial court accepted the notion that three not guilty verdicts were obtained, one mistrial on one count was the intent of the foreman, foreperson, and it seems to me, in the middle of all that, as I was, unfortunately, that what happened was the foreperson in her affidavit states that she informed the bailiff that they had an agreement on three counts, and that there was only a mistrial only a hung jury on one count, and somehow that did not get communicated to the bailiff, or if it got communicated to the bailiff, it wasn't communicated to the trial judge. So we're sitting in chambers on the second time. I filed a motion for mistrial based on the time of the first one, and that was overruled. But after the second one, it became apparent that this jury wasn't going to be able to reach a verdict according to the question posed. Now,
at that point in time, did you have any remedies available with regard to asking or polling the jury as to the...
No, I know...
You didn't want to poll the jury, did you? Because you didn't know what the verdicts were going to be. You didn't know whether they were going to be for you or against you. You didn't know that.
The answer is, when a jury reports, if I can answer your question honestly, you either ask them to continue to deliberate or you accept a mistrial. What if I had said, I want it to go, and the court declares a mistrial, or the state asks for a mistrial, and we discharge the jury, and nobody knows what they say. I don't get a chance to poll the jury. I'm not aware of any procedure.
But you were the one that asked for the mistrial, and the mistrial was granted at your request.
If you find any authority in the mistrial cases to support that position, then I'll stand here and say, I was ineffective. You're misciting the rule of mistrial. I can't object during trial to a prosecutor's argument, ask for a mistrial based upon prejudice, and then on retrial declare double jeopardy. There's very limited exceptions in which a defendant can do that. But this has nothing to do with the trial or error. This has to do with the jury deliberations and the verdict itself. And there are no cases on this. I looked. But I don't know how many times there would have been a jury foreman, who was a lawyer, by the way, that wouldn't have made it clear in the question to the court that they had reached a verdict on three of the four counts. I mean, how simple would that be? And if they had said, Mr. Your Honor, we had reached a verdict on three of the four counts, I couldn't say, I don't want to hear it. Right? Could I say, oh, those could be bad verdicts. I would have to take what the jury had said. There may be strategic calculations on whether I want the jury to continue deliberating or not. That's fair.
I don't understand where you're going with this argument. You asked for a mistrial. Well, the court granted it at your request, and now you want to claim double jeopardy based upon an affidavit of the juror after the trial was over.
Well, I just respectfully disagree with your analysis. There's no case that says that. No case that I can find that says that the ministerial declaration of a mistrial by a judge or a prosecutor or a judge where a jury says it can't reach a verdict waives any claim that I would have to misconduct in the issuance of the verdict.
Is there anything in our record other than the affidavit of the foreperson that supports your argument?
The record that was created, as I recall, was that she filed or caused to be filed or asked me to file the affidavit. So that was filed. We filed first a motion for judgment of acquittal in accordance with what we claimed the real verdict to be. That was denied. Then when that was denied, a plea and bar was filed. On the hearing and the plea and bar, the affidavit was received, and then the state or the court on its own motion submitted two other emails from other jurors, not authenticated, not signed, not under oath, indicating that there was probably an acquittal as to three counts, some dispute as to when they had reached. So yes, there was evidence of the affidavit of the foreperson that said, we clearly were 12-0 on three of the counts. We were 11-1 on one of the counts. And I'm just simply saying Mr. Combs has a right to that verdict. And process...
There wasn't any verdict.
Well, that's...
There wasn't any verdict. You never established that there was a verdict.
Let me also just point out that I don't have the benefit of...
You can't take the benefit. You can't poll the jury and find out what their vote is and then ask for a mistrial if the vote is against you.
No, but that's, Judge, honestly, that's not what happened here. I've been doing this for 40 years. Mm-hmm. I know that. I know what the rules are. I've tried lots of cases with mistrials, three this last year. I understand that whatever the count is, I understand that if the jury says it's hung, I take a risk as the defense attorney in deciding to ask for greater deliberations. I don't know if it's 11-1 for me, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a jury that says it reached a verdict. Now, Is there evidential?
But nobody made any inquiry with regard to that.
You can't. There isn't any process by which you can do that. I don't know what that is. Maybe the state didn't cite what it was. This is very bizarre. And when you have a very bizarre case...
You're saying even though the jury never officially reached a verdict, and after a mistrial has been declared by the court at the request of the defendant may then proceed to poll all the jurors to see whether or not they really did agree with whatever they voted for after the mistrial has been granted.
Unfortunately, that's not what happened in this case. All I can say...
Of importance to you, is the foreperson coming back and saying we're deadlocked. That's the beginning of your story.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's deadlocked for me or deadlocked against me, but it certainly wasn't told to us that they were deadlocked as to counts. The reasonable attorney in that circumstance, when the jury instruction does not seems to make it clear that they're independent verdicts, when the foreperson reports it deadlocked twice, I could say...
Does the court have an obligation to require the jury to fill out the verdict forms when there's been a mistrial motion?
I'm clearly in uncharted territory.
I know.
And my lights are blinking. So the short answer is, I don't know what could have been done differently, except a communication by the foreman to the bailiff that we have a verdict on three counts and we're hung on one. What do? And we could have said, keep deliberating on the one count. Return your verdict, whatever they may be, guilty, innocent, turn them on the... But that didn't happen. Somehow the system failed to communicate what the presiding juror said was their actual result. If state law, rules of evidence, preclude me from arguing that, then you can make that determination and we can decide whether that's right or wrong. The thing I want to point out to you is Judge Ott didn't make any findings. He didn't say there was an acquittal or there wasn't an acquittal. He didn't say that there was a due process violation he just denied the motion. He just denied both of them in a summary order, so we have no findings of fact. He could have said, Mr. Krieger, I find this evidence incompetent. And so therefore we know the issue on appeal would be the competence of the evidence. Mr. Krieger, I find the testimony of this person credible and this person not credible, so I find you haven't proven there was a not guilty verdict. Then I would know when I come up what we're talking about. I don't know what we're talking about because all the judge said is, it's essentially a very strange case, I deny your motion. Invitation to what? Ask the question of a higher court to figure out whether there's anything I can do about it. But I would be remiss in my duties to say, I have a foreman that sends an affidavit that says, we acquitted your client on three counts. Now, Mr. Krieger, do something about it. That's what I'm trying to do. So thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph, I represent the state of Nebraska. I'll just jump right in. First address Justice Wright's question, then Justice Stacy's question on 27606. So in our view, the consent is relevant. There was no verdict here. And I think the case law is pretty clear. State versus Muhannad says that it's granted at the defendant's request. The only exception to the double jeopardy issue is if the defendant was goaded into moving to the mistrial, and that did not happen. Opposing counsel said he wasn't able to find cases to that effect in the hung jury context. I cited three of them in my brief from the federal circuits. U.S. v. Alec, which was unpublished, and U.S. v. Warren, U.S. versus Razmilovic as well.
Is it the state's position that once the mistrial has been granted by the request of the defendant that the case is over, with regard to that, without having established a verdict of innocence or guilty on any of the counts?
Correct, assuming that the jury was actually discharged as well. That makes it essentially irreversible. This court said that in State v. Anderson.
What do you think the law is if the foreperson reporting says we're deadlocked, but all the players there know there's four counts? What is the assumption? Is there an obligation on any of the players, including the court, to say deadlock on what? on four.
Well,
must one assume, and they had a verdict form, I assume.
Yes. They returned the verdict form on
Right. What, so is there an obligation by any of the players to come in and say, right, deadlock times four, times one, two, three, four, and clarify the situation so then the persons with the power to do so could say keep going or don't?
And if I understand your question, you're talking about before mistrial occurs?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I guess the U.S. Supreme Court has said that it, you know, it's discretionary, obviously, Bluford v. Arkansas, but they have never prescribed a particular thing that the court must do or that must be done before moving forward with the mistrial.
What's the path that point?
It would become, I guess, discretionary. If there's some sign that they're contemplating a partial verdict or that they're only deadlocked on one of the counts versus the four, I mean, there's a number of things, I guess, the court could do within its discretion, such as acknowledge that perhaps a partial verdict is possible. I think, based on my research in Nebraska, it is a bit unclear, but some of the cases suggest, and for example, State v. Jenkins just recently, this 2016 case, there was a partial verdict, two counts of robbery, and then they were hung on the conspiracy charge. So I think a partial verdict would be possible. So theoretically, if that's brought to the judge's attention.
Obviously, a partial verdict is possible because you've brought four counts.
Well,
so the jury can convict on all four, it can acquit on all four, or it can convict on some and acquit on others, or vice versa.
I meant in terms of partial verdict that they could come to a verdict on a couple of counts and then be hung on a different
one.
I say that is because in that Bluford v. Arkansas case, apparently under Arkansas state law.
That's not an unusual situation.
No, I'm back a little bit earlier, and if the four person had come in and said, what's your thinking? And they'd say, we want pizza, and you're going, well, that's not informative. There's four things on deck.
No, sure. I mean, if the jury foreman had, you know, in their questions said to the judge, hey, we've come to a decision on these three counts, but we're stuck on this one, Then the judge might have had some obligation to move forward before declaring a mistrial to perhaps effectuate that partial verdict. But you had nothing like that here. It's just simply, we can't come to a verdict, we're deadlocked.
Well, was there anything in the instructions that would have misled the jury as to how it was to examine each one of the charges presented?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And what would be the result of then allowing people to come in and contest verdicts after, or contest the charges on the basis of double jeopardy after the mistrial had been granted by a defendant, request of the defendant?
Yeah, I don't think you can. As I said in my brief, I think once the defendant moves for the mistrial, there's one exception to the general rule, double jeopardy rule, and that is, was he goaded into it? And if he's not, then double jeopardy doesn't bar a retrial on any of the counts.
You made reference that you were apparently unable to find any law or authority as to who was supposed to do what in these kinds of situations, or how the judge is to respond in this kind of a situation. Should this court, assuming there will be a written opinion in this matter, should this court set out some proper procedure for folks to follow in the future?
Well, I never said that there was no case law or authority outlining a procedure. It's just in this particular case, the district court and the parties, nobody was notified, apparently, that they were...
Well, should the inquiry be, if there are multiple counts,
right,
should the inquiry be in these situations, are you hung on all the counts?
I mean, it's certainly, I think, within the discretion of the court to do that, but that's why I pointed to Bluford v. Arkansas.
It's a policy matter, should we do that?
Well, that would be up to this court. I was just pointing
to... Does the state have an opinion in that regard?
If I were trial judge, I probably would. But the Bluford v. Arkansas decision from SCOTUS says basically we have never required a particular thing. It's discretionary. And so that's what I am citing to as far as what to do if the jury foreman tells the court, hey, you know, we're stuck only on one of the
okay.
four counts.
Suppose the jury foreman comes in and says, we're unable to reach a verdict. At that point, can counsel's request the court examine the jury as to what counts they're hung on? before it requests a mistrial?
Well, again, on the Bluford v. Arkansas case, they suggested, at least in dissent, that, you know, there's different things that the court can do when they're notified of it, but they left it within the discretion of the trial court.
So the court could say, without, pardon me, invading the thought process of the jury,
right.
I mean, you just came back and said, we're deadlocked, but as you all know, there's four things on deck.
Yeah.
Does that apply to all?
Right. But again, in this case, we don't have any of that.
And would the conduct, alleged conduct of the bailiff be so egregious that due process and equal protection would require the court to dismiss the case, all those charges that the jury alleged that it found a verdict on?
No. So as far as the contact between the bailiff, one, that was just an allegation. We don't actually know what happened there. But two, we're talking purely double jeopardy here. We're not talking due process or equal protection.
Yeah.
And as I pointed out in my brief, the appeals from the denial of the plea and bar, this court's appellate jurisdiction under this court's case in State v. Lloyd is limited to that only, that issue. And so on the double jeopardy rule, as I set forward, it's on the defendant's motion and we're done, as I understand it. And I did want to
address... I beg your pardon, so you're saying due process has nothing to do with the form of action now on appeal?
Well, basically, this court has said that when the appeal is from a final order, it's limited to the issues presented by that order. The only order, you know, is the plea and bar, and the only issue raised is the double jeopardy clause. So as I understand it, it's limited to that issue. And again, as I said in my brief, I think once he moved for the mistrial and it's granted and he was not goaded into it, there is no double jeopardy bar. I wanted to address Justice Stacy's question about 27-606-2 as well. And my reading, I guess, of the statutory language there is that it's inquiring into the it's talking about inquiring into the validity of the verdict, and we don't have a verdict here. So I guess I did not read 27-606-2 to bar the evidence adduced at trial. In my research, I did find a couple cases that went both ways. For example, Miller versus City of Louisiana, 661 F3D 1024, 9th Circuit 2011, basically took that approach. But you then had Witherspoon v. State, 322 Arkansas 376, a 1995 case where they said basically their version of 27-606-2 should apply whether a verdict is reached or a mistrial declared. But again, and one more case, sorry, State v. Harrison in this jurisdiction, 264 Neb 727, I thought it was analogous because there this court said the testimony in question was not an inquiry into the validity of the verdict under 27-606-2. Accordingly, the testimony was not prohibited by that section. So I guess my reading of the statute is because there was no verdict, it would be okay to inquire, although there is authority to the contrary.
Do you think it's good policy after a mistrial to permit running out to the jurors and...
No, because I don't think there's anything that can be done at that point. As this court says in State v. Anderson, basically once the mistrial is declared and the jury is discharged, there's nothing that can be done.
Is it the state's
position?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is it the state's position that that sort of inquiry should take place in the courtroom, on the record, in the form of polling the jurors before a mistrial is declared?
Yeah, that would be acceptable, yes. Unless there are any further questions, we'd ask this court to affirm the ruling as well.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That takes us to the last case of the day.